It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. President Biden will be in Pittsburgh today to promote his plans to rebuild the nation's infrastructure. Infrastructure investment is of vital interest to our region, and we're joined now by Butler County Commissioner Leslie Oshie. Leslie is the vice chair of the Southwest Pennsylvania Commission, which helps counties and municipalities access and implement infrastructure funding. Commissioner, welcome to the Confluence.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
The president's $3 trillion plan also includes money for climate change adjustment and social justice. But what are you hoping to hear from the president in terms of infrastructure investment?
Well, I think it's no secret for the Southwest PA region that we have many failing roads and bridges, and we've struggled to maintain, just to maintain, our infrastructure here in Southwest PA. And so we had hoped last administration that we would have a transportation bill that would help federal highway funding. And today we're hoping that he has plans to make that occur. We have probably three pages here of projects that we do not have capacity to fund.
From an infrastructure perspective, what do you feel the biggest need is for the 10-county region, or does it vary from county to county?
There is some variance from county to county because you have seen an awful lot of mudslides that have affected roadways, particularly in Allegheny County. And some places need infrastructure expansion. But I think because the need has been so great just to maintain the roadways and we've had to focus so much just on maintenance, there's been little funding available for expansion that allows for greater economic development. We were fortunate enough in our county to secure two competitive federal build grants over the last 4 years, and that added $40 million to capacity to help us with our Gateway 228 project.
Yes, the Gateway 228 project is in between Route 8 and Route 19 for the people who live in that area. The American Society of Civil Engineers puts out a national report card annually on our infrastructure. The newest grade nationally is C-. Each state gets a grade every 4 years. The most recent one for Pennsylvania, the overall grade was C-, but D-plus for roads and bridges. Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
Oh, I would say it's an accurate assessment. I think even in our Southwest region, we're even more challenged. I mean, we are challenged to compete for spike funding in Pennsylvania. Even though our Southwest region generates 20% of the state's revenues from sales and use tax, we only get about 11% of the discretionary funding that's available. So a lot of that money goes either into the Harrisburg or Philadelphia areas, and we've been extremely vocal. We've joined together as with all the commissioners in Southwest PA. We need attention here.
So generating more revenue than we're getting back, is that what you're saying?
Correct. You know, we will look at what we're generating here in Southwest PA, and then we look at what we're getting back, particularly in discretionary funding. It hasn't been anywhere near competitive.
The nation is slowly coming out of a pandemic-induced recession. Is this the time for an infrastructure bill rather than, say, education or employment assistance?
Well, I think it's overdue, given the fact that, you know, the pandemic has dramatically affected the gas tax since people weren't traveling. They weren't traveling to work. So what you've seen, you know, is a tremendous decline in the use of transit, in the gas tax, you know, in general. So I can't think of a better bill to put forward right now.
Pennsylvania relies heavily on state and federal gas tax revenues to pay for road and bridge work. In fact, Pennsylvania is the second highest gas tax in the nation. The governor has a panel to look at alternative ways to fund roads and bridges and to phase out the gas tax. Do you, as chair of the Butler County Commissioners, or does the Southwest Pennsylvania Commission favor phasing out the gas tax?
We're looking for multiple stable funding alternatives. And we've actually done a couple of studies, even related to transit in particular, and looking at ways that we can all bring some funding to the table. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the answer is yet in terms of creating that stable revenue, but it's clear that the gasoline tax is not it and can in many ways be harmful to commerce.
PennDOT appears to be moving ahead with the tolling of 9 interstate bridges, including I-79 in Allegheny County, to help fund construction. What do you think, in general, of tolls as a revenue generator to help with construction maintenance costs?
Well, you know, it may be inevitable. I traveled to Florida for the first time. I mean, like, what was amazing to me was the number of bridges and roads that were tolled. I think the trouble that you run into, people try to find alternative routes. And then the alternative routes, you know, that puts more pressure on local roadways. You know, everyone is looking for some way to fairly generate that revenue. So it's an alternative that I'm certain has to be looked at.
You referenced this earlier. 4 years ago, when Donald Trump took office, there was hope for bipartisanship on infrastructure, but that fell apart when Trump presented a plan with $200 billion in federal funding, and Democrats opposed it because of the heavy emphasis on state and local funding and private investments. Do you think that President Biden's plan can be bipartisan?
I don't know all of the details of that, but I do think the one thing that was for certain is that they made it clear that we had to be able to bring money to the table locally in order to be competitive to earn those that grant funding. What the concept was there had to be, you know, federal input with some state and local match, as well as private investment. So we have discussed that here. We've looked at that here. We've looked at many ways, particularly with transit, on engaging, you know, the business community and in supporting those efforts in order to sustain public transit systems, or even the newer ways, which I think you're going to see as time moves on. I think there's a lot on the table here, but what was clear, there has to be a commitment by all parties. I don't think you can rely on the federal government all in all. I don't think we can rely on, you know, state and local either. So we have to make sure that we can all be at the table.
Leslie Oshie is the chair of the Butler County Board of Commissioners, and she's also vice chair of the Southwest Pennsylvania Commission. Commissioner, thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's been great to be with you.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. This Sunday, restaurants and bars will be able to increase their capacity for indoor dining and also serve alcohol to customers without food. This comes as the country is seeing increasing COVID-19 cases and states loosening restrictions, and the rate of vaccinations is rising. In January, we spoke with Amanda Schaffner, the president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild, and since then, she's also gotten a new job as field sales representative for Great Lakes Brewing. Amanda, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
The last time we spoke with you, Governor Wolf just lifted his latest set of restrictions to mitigate the spread of the virus during the holiday season, and you hadn't been working behind the bar since November. How are you doing now?
You know, I'm doing okay. I was brought back to work when I was with Dianoia's Eatery in February to help out with Valentine's Day very briefly. And then they decided to reopen for in-person dining in early March. So I worked through their first 2 weeks of in-person dining, and then I transitioned to my new position, which is very different.
Did the pandemic and all the uncertainties that it caused lead you to move away from direct restaurant work?
It did not. And I know that the optics of that seem to say otherwise, but no, I loved, you know, what I did within restaurants. I took great pride in the fact that I, you know, worked in restaurants. It was just a matter of, honestly, some physical issues, long shifts on your feet, wear and tear on your joints. And I just kind of got to a point where, you know, I was starting to reflect on getting older and realized I probably should make a shift.
What about others in the service industry? Whether you're learning about them from your new position as you visit bars and restaurants, or as president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild, Have they gotten new jobs? Are they still waiting to return to former positions? Overall, what's their status?
It's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, yeah, there's some people that did find other jobs, and a lot of them it was, you know, this kind of lifted the veil on some greater issues within our industry. Some folks have gone back and, you know, understand the risk level that's involved with going back to work. And some folks are just saying, you know what, it's not worth the risk for me right now. I have unemployment. There's some supplemental, you know, income with unemployment benefits currently. It's, I will wait until I'm vaccinated, or I will wait until, you know, all my coworkers are vaccinated.
Sunday, April 4th, Easter Sunday. It's a very big day for restaurants and bars. What are you hearing from service workers? Are they nervous, excited? What?
Some people are excited to have the opportunity to make money that's close to what they used to make with increased capacity. But I would say a lot of people are nervous. I think rightfully so, especially given the fact that hospitality workers are technically group 1C currently, and they should be moved up to a higher priority group if we're going to open things up a little bit more and have them interacting with more people that aren't wearing masks for extended periods of time.
Things are obviously a lot different now than when we spoke back in January. So what does this new restriction lift mean for the industry, do you think, as a whole, after so many months of uncertainty?
I think the industry is going to struggle for a little while. You know, if you're familiar with anyone who owns a restaurant, manages a restaurant, anything of that nature right now, they've probably told you that they are desperately looking for staff.
What do you think the reluctance is due to? Is it safety concerns? Is it more of, well, all right, we take a job, but who knows what kind of tip income we'll get? It all depends on if people are going to actually come to the restaurants and bars.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's, you know, there's no guarantee in what you make, right? But also on the other side of that, you know, for folks who work in the kitchens, are they going to be taken care of? You know, what's the hourly look like? Are there benefits? Mm-hmm.
Finally, Amanda, you have mentioned that now when the food service industry has been so disrupted, could be the time to rethink how the whole system operates. Are you optimistic things will get better for hourly service workers and that there can be, will be, real change?
That's questionable. I'd like to say I'm optimistic. I think there's a lot of people within our community that work on advocacy towards better working environment for staff and in general, just having them more taken care of. And I think at the end of the day, like, it really does take a village. It takes, you know, people that work in this industry to get behind them and say, yes, I deserve a safe working environment, proper rights, things of that nature.
Amanda Schaffner is president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild. Amanda, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. Bill Peduto has sometimes been at odds with both activists and police in his first two terms as Pittsburgh's mayor, and he goes into a re-election bid after a year of protests demanding both more accountability and less funding for police. 90.5 WESA's Ariel Worthy reports that when you look at the numbers, there are signs that policing has begun to change.
Last summer's demonstrations against police brutality hit close to home for Peduto. After a few protests resulted in multiple arrests and the use of crowd control devices like gas grenades, activists came to his front porch in August to demand answers. Critics denounced the size of the city's police budget and the use of military equipment and tactics. But the numbers suggest that in some ways, city police have scaled back their presence, even as the force's budget and roster have grown. The number of arrests by city police has dropped by one-third since Peduto took office in 2014. The number of Black arrestees has declined too, but at a slower than average rate, so they now make up a larger share of the total. That's invited criticism from State Representative Ed Gainey, who is challenging Peduto for mayor. Gainey says Black residents are arrested at higher numbers because police spend too much time in Black communities.
Every single day at the bottom of my street is a stop sign. I've been pulled over 11 or 12 times because they said I ain't stay at the stop sign long enough. Over-policing in neighborhoods is a problem. The numbers are down, but the percentage in our community is so high.
A task force Peduto created last summer acknowledged the problem. The group said police could not explain the disparities in arrest data, and the likeliest explanation was, quote, discrimination based on race. It urged the department to identify and eliminate racial disparities in routine actions. City Councilor Ricky Burgess, who has been a prominent voice on police reform, says the mayor has already begun making changes.
I'm going to argue that we have been one of the most progressive cities in the entire nation during his time as mayor. We've brought lots of training. We have moved money from police to community services. We've done almost everything within our power.
The city says that violent crimes are down since 2014. It also boasts of tripling the number of officers doing community engagement, which is intended to reduce arrests and other confrontations. There are signs that that approach is paying off. In Peduto's first 3 years in office, the City Police Review Board saw a steady decline in complaints under former Police Chief Cameron McClay. The numbers have bounced back slightly under current Chief Scott Schubert, but overall, the average number of complaints has dropped by a quarter under Peduto's administration. Beth Pittenger, the Review Board's executive director, says she sees a real cultural shift on the force.
They broadened their view of what law enforcement and how law enforcement should be practiced in the city of Pittsburgh. Schubert has been holding officers accountable where he can, where they can discipline, he has, and he has done it quickly.
Still, reports show an uptick in review board complaints last year. Pittenger says that may stem from controversy over last summer's protests, and critics say Peduto still hasn't gotten the protesters' message. Activist and One Hood Media CEO Jasiri X says the city invests too much in policing and not enough in efforts to tackle poverty and other ills.
Half of Black people in Pittsburgh are teetering on poverty, right? Barely getting by. But yet, as a city, for every dollar that we spend, 30 cents goes on police. Like, the city actually has money enough to give resources our community desperately needs. But we spend it on police.
But city officials have said that if there were major cuts to public safety, investment in community policing would take a hit. I'm Ariel Worthy, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.